Welcome. I think I counted six people who had to either cancel all or part of Sesshin due to sickness or health issues or taking care of others with health issues. So we sit in the midst of birth and death, of fragile bodies, fragile life, and it's so easy to take health for granted. So that we can be here, sitting like lotuses in the flames. We can be grateful that we're able to be here for this time and place now. And we can sit for all those who can't be here now due to conditions. And how temporary it all is, our window of opportunity in this life to practice the way and clarify and illuminate the mind ground. So rare. Not only are there six people with us, but actually something like maybe 7 billion people also are not sitting with us. Because there's better things to do. And important things. And of course, especially in Rohatsu Sesshin, maybe some are sitting with us around the world in Sesshin. Maybe a lot of people finished on December 8th, but I think Green Gulch Farm is in Rohatsu Sesshin now, and Tassajara is in the midst of Rohatsu Sesshin now, so we know there are many others. So what's really a miracle is that all of us were able to make it here now. And with so many other possibilities, it seems like we could have been some other time or place. Like dewdrops on the grass. This is it. So we're looking at Keizan Zenji's Zazen Yojinki, the guidelines for Zazen by our 14th century Soto Zen ancestor Keizan. And he's been celebrating Zazen as going right into the ocean of awareness and so on. The big view of Zazen, but now in the text where the section where he's into the kind of the nuts and bolts, practical matters. I remember once in Dokusan with Norman Fisher Roshi, I was asking about these kind of nuts and bolts issues, maybe about breathing or tuning the mind and breath and body in Zazen. And after our Dokusan, he said something like, "It's good to talk shop once in a while." It's like shop talk, right, for Zen students. It's like, a Have you ever tried tuning the carburetor on a 57 Chevy? How did it work for you? So this is Kazan's shop talk. He's particularly into the issue of breathing now, tuning or harmonizing breathing in Zazen. And to start with a contemporary inspiration about breathing, there's a brand new book by Katagiri Roshi called The Light That Shines Through Infinity, Zen and the Energy of Life. The Light That Shines Through Infinity. I love that title, which apparently comes from Dogen, not Katagiri Roshi. A lot of the book is Katagiri Roshi commenting on different Dogen essays from the Shobogenzo. And we have a relationship here to Katagiri Roshi through our late abbot, Catherine Danis Roshi, who was, I think, quite devoted student of Katagiri Roshi. And we have his relics here in the form of calligraphy, quite a few calligraphy scrolls by Katagiri Roshi, like the four vows that are hanging in the community room are calligraphed by him. Because this came out like a week ago or something. So here he's speaking about Zazen and breathing. He says, "So keep turning the stream of mind away from your dualistic thoughts and inward to the energy of your life." That is our Zazen practice. Learn the technique of Zazen and then practice it again and again until technique is not technique. Follow it until it penetrates your skin, muscle, bone, and there is no subject that knows or object that is known. When you breathe in Zazen, turn your mind into breathing. How? Sit down, take a breath, and tune in to that breath. There is no particular pattern for how to breathe in Zazen. If you try to control your breath, you create a gap between I and my breath. So just pay careful attention to the reality of breathing itself. Just continually breathe. That's a good idea. Continually breathe. If you see a long breath, turn the stream of your mind into the long breath. Be present with the long breath for a while. If your mind deviates from that breath, just come back and pay attention to the next breath. Concentrate on each breath. Strike and hit each breath exactly with one stroke. Very naturally, your mind and your breath become one. Oneness between you and breathing enables you to feel that your life is worth living. Oneness between you and your breathing enables you to feel that your life is worth living. This is perfection of concentration. Your mind is unified and there's no gap between breath and you. There's just breathing, the rhythm of life. This is samadhi. When you practice Zazen as samadhi, your Zazen is not just you. It's the rhythm of the whole universe. Becoming one with the breath, so there's no me or you in addition to the breath. Yeah. strike and hit each breath exactly with one stroke. One stroke, maybe like calligraphy. Just one stroke, or one stroke of the mind, just directly touching the breath. Shikan Taza. And Shikan means just or only, and Ta means to strike or hit. And Za is sitting. So only strike sitting, only only hit this moment of sitting with one stroke. And Dogen Zenji, in his thousands of pages of writings and recorded talks, only mentions the breath maybe like once or twice. Like in the Fukan Zazengi, he says, after you've settled your posture and arranged your posture, take a deep breath, inhale and exhale, rock your body right and left and settle into sitting. That's one place. Take a deep breath before sitting. But the main place where he speaks a whole paragraph about the breath. It's kind of known, usually when discussions of Dogen and the breath come up, people usually quote this because I think it's like kind of the only time. So it's a nice one to know about. This is in the Eihei Koroku, Dogen's extensive record. Dogen says, in the Zazen of patch road monks, which is a Zen way of saying, particularly Zen practitioners, first you should sit correctly with upright posture, then regulate or tune or harmonize your breath, which is the word that Keizan is using too, harmonize your breathing, or regulate your breath, and settle your mind. In the lesser vehicle, originally there were two gateways. The lesser vehicle is the translation for Hinayana, which is the great vehicle's way of talking about a kind of like narrower type of practice. Not necessarily for any particular school of Buddhism, but a kind of more narrower approach. And Mahayana, the great vehicle, is like the very wide, all-inclusive, all-encompassing, inconceivable approach. The small vehicle is the kind of conceivable one. So what's nice thing about the small vehicle is the lesser vehicle, it has some things you can actually understand and do. So in the lesser vehicle, originally there were two gateways, which were counting breaths and contemplating impurity. In the lesser vehicle, people used counting to regulate their breath, or to tune their breath, counting the breath in sets of 10 usually. Which is, I think, a fine practice. But here Dogen's making a particular point. So he says, however, the Buddha ancestors engaging the way has always differed from the lesser vehicle. A Buddha ancestor, which happens to be Nagarjuna in this case, once said, even if you arouse the mind of a leprous wild fox, never practice the self-regulation of the lesser vehicle. So, Maybe the Mahayana way sometimes of looking at the lesser vehicle is it's like trying to control yourself into a certain, being a certain way. So, a kind of strong Mahayana statement. Don't ever try to control yourself. That's a Hinayana practice. In the Mahayana, the great vehicle, there's also a method for regulating the breath, which is knowing that one breath is long, another breath is short. Parenthetically, I could say, in the early sutras, the Buddha also taught, like the Foundations of Mindfulness Sutra, he says, if there's a long breath, just know that it's a long breath. And a short breath, know that it's short. It's not usually considered a Mahayana sutra, but this is a Mahayana way of regulating the breath. To know that one breath is long and another breath is short. The breath reaches the Dantian. You know, the Dantian is 1.5 inches below the navel, they usually say, is from, you know, in Qigong and Chinese medicine and so on, it's often mentioned as a kind of energy center related to the navel chakra and in Indian yoga. And I think kind of a Taoist term, Dantian literally means, or in Japanese it's called Tanden, literally means the field of elixir, kind of almost like Taoist alchemical kind of reference to this energy center. The field of cinnabar, which is like almost like a Taoist immortality potion. Yes.
Is that the same thing as hara?
Yeah, I think hara, not sure, but I think in Japanese hara maybe just means more like abdomen. It's more like the, it's the more, physical, just area of the body. Yeah, but yes, same. So sometimes we talk about hara, and the dantian is maybe this more kind of spiritual, energetic term for the same. And I think usually referred to as more like a particular point, 1.5 inches, where the hara, I think, is the whole kind of belly or abdomen. So this is, I think it's nice and kind of rare that Dogen gets into this kind of detail. So Dogen says, the Mahayana method for tuning, harmonizing the breath is knowing that one breath is long, another breath is short. The breath reaches the Dantian and comes up from the Dantian. Although exhale and inhale differ, both of them occur depending on the Dantian. Impermanence is easy to clarify, and regulating or harmonizing the mind is easy to accomplish in this way. And I personally do find it's like very helpful to, when breathing in Zazen, to really let the breath settle into the lower belly and breathe from down here. And so we breathe into the Dantian, and then breathe out from the Dantian. The breath reaches the Tanden and comes up from the Tanden. In Bukokuji, where I practice in Japan, the Tangen Harada Roshi, the abbot there, would sometimes teach shikantaza, or just striking sitting, in a very simple way. He'd say, shikantaza, He didn't speak much English, but he knew a few little phrases in English, and this was one of them. His brief Shikantaza instructions. How do you just sit? Only point here. Almost like push the breath out when you... It's kind of unusual, just sitting instruction, yes. Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah. Because if we talk physicality, we know that actually the lungs come to about here, and then this is diaphragm, right? Yeah. The bottom. And so we don't literally air oxygen. Is not literally going all the way down into the lower belly, literally, right? So it's kind of an experiential instruction, right? Breathe, letting the mind's attention, as we're breathing in, the mind's attention is flowing down and we can feel the lower lungs. I think physically, the lower lungs can feel, as opposed to when we're kind of nervous and excited. I think it actually is literally like our upper lungs are breathing up in our chest more. I think there is an actual physical thing of how the lungs are operating. But this is even going further. Breathing in. We feel as if the lower lungs are filling, and we can feel the diaphragm that's actually is the muscles that are regulating the lungs. We feel that diaphragm just kind of like sink way down. And I think that it may be that there's muscles moving both ways in the diaphragm, but I think that on the in-breath, it's like the diaphragm is actually relaxing and the muscles contracting is what pushes it up in the breath out.
They encourage, like in physical therapy, they encourage when you inhale to expand your stomach, to go deep, mm-hmm. to contract your stomach muscles. Exhale. And when you exhale, you exhale twice as long as you would inhale. The babies naturally do it with the stomach. You can see it.
So there it is in physical therapy too. And do you know physically in the body, is the in-breath a relaxing of the diaphragm muscles?
I think it's actually the contraction part. It kind of like the diaphragm contracts and goes down and creates like a vacuum.
Okay. So that goes nicely with, I think Suzuki Roshi once said, die on the out-breath. So talking about breathing in Zazen. So like the muscular relaxation happens on the out-breath. And it does feel like that. A relaxation, effortless, the out-breath is more effortless, and the in-breath is like making some effort to stay alive.
One of the practices that I've learned in yoga is to place one hand on the belly, one hand on the chest, and watching the breath beginning with expanding the belly with an inhale, and then a wave coming up, something we could do right now, and then the full inhale, then a pause at the top of the in-breath, and then exhale, feeling the chest relax, followed by the belly tucking all the way to the back of the spine. And that pause is the death at the end when you're not inhaling again. There's no breath.
Mm-hmm.
And then beginning again with the inhale, expanding. Mm-hmm. I begin to feel a kind of isolation of the belly and really where the breath is going. It's quite profound, given the teaching.
Yeah, really noticing the whole journey of the breath.
And
yeah, yeah.
Because you want to quick breath.
Yeah, that pause.
Allowing the belly then to expand.
Allowing the breath to come in, and seeing if we surrender and really just are willing to die on the out breath, and then trust that life will breathe in for us without having to do it. Yeah, and then it's also we can pause on the in breath for just a moment before breathing out too. Yeah.
I think that that's what initiates the inhalation. You have to get to that point where you're not breathing.
Uh-huh.
Initiates the inhalation. And there's an interesting fact about the diaphragm. It's only innervated by one nerve.
And it works very nicely even when we're asleep, luckily. Yeah. Yeah. The breath that links birth to death. Possible to truly describe. And that's kind of what Katagiri Roshi was saying, I think. He's like, if you tried to, he was saying if you try to control your breath, you create a gap between I and my breath, and in a way maybe trying to figure it out exactly and work the muscles in some particular way creates the separation from it, yeah. So it's taking care of itself. But sometimes I notice if I'm not so present and the mind is kind of scattered, to actually intentionally notice the breath and intentionally, again, this is less a physical thing, but more like the mind's attention guiding on the in-breath, guiding the, we might say the chi or the prana, all the way down to the navel chakra, the dantian, and just it's not a conceptual thing, but it is a mental attention kind of thing, and it certainly has an effect. It really for me it settles the scattered mind and relaxes the body. So I think these links between mind, particularly intention and attention aspect of mind, and the breath, and this kind of energy of life, and the body are all like so intimately connected that we can't quite figure it out, but they all mutually interrelated.
Directing it to parts of the body that are tight, in pain.
Yep.
Otherwise not in harmony.
Yeah. In Zazen too, I think if there's some tension in some part of the body, putting our mental attention there does tend to relax it. Yeah. So Dogen's speaking about the Dantian in this way. And then he says, my late teacher, Tian Tong Wu Jing, said, breath enters and reaches the Dan Tien, and yet there's no place from which it comes. It enters the Tan Din, and yet there's no place from which it comes. Therefore, it's neither long nor short. Breath emerges from the Dan Tien, and yet there's nowhere it goes. Therefore, it's neither short nor long. So Ru Jing, his teacher, also talked about the breath and the Dan Tien, but got a little bit more mystical with it. I think I hear this, he's bringing in a kind of emptiness teaching. The breath reaches the Dan Tien, but it's not like it came from out here through the mouth down the windpipe in this way. It didn't come from anywhere. And it's also, you could say it's a meditation on the total presence of when the breath fills the Dan Tien. There is no past and no future. Therefore, there's no long or short breath. Because a long breath means like we've measured the time between the start of the breath and the end of the breath. So it's kind of we're involved in the flow of time. But this is more like the breath just fills the Dan Tien and there is no past. Therefore, we cannot measure if this breath was long or short. There's just now. And it didn't come from anywhere, and when it leaves here, it's not going anywhere. Therefore, it's neither short nor long. And Dogen says, my late teacher said it like that. Suppose someone were to ask me, Ahei, teacher, how do you regulate your breath? I would simply say, although it's not the great vehicle, it differs from the lesser vehicle. Although it's not the lesser vehicle, it differs from the great vehicle. Suppose that person inquired again, saying, well, and ultimately, what is it? I would say to him, exhale and inhale are neither long nor short. This is Dogen-esque breath instructions. Now here's Kazan in the methods for Zazen, guidelines for Zazen treatise. We heard yesterday all these experiences during Zazen can happen, like feeling hot or cold, discomfort or ease, stiff or life, light, loose, heavy, light, sometimes startled. These sensations arise through the disharmony of mind and breath. Harmonize the breath in this way. Open the mouth just slightly and allow long breaths to be long and short breaths to be short, and it will harmonize naturally. Follow the breath for a while till a sense of awareness arises, and then let the breath just be natural through the nose. He goes on. The mind may feel as if it is sinking down or floating up. It may seem dull or sharp. Sometimes you can see outside the room, the insides of the body, the forms of Buddhas or Bodhisattvas. Sometimes you may believe you have wisdom and now thoroughly understand all the sutras and commentaries. These extraordinary conditions are diseases or sickness that arise through the disharmony of mind and breath. That's so interesting when you have this insight. Wow, I totally get it now. This, all these teachings are about, this is a disease. In this case, yeah, quite. Maybe especially if we're kind of like excited and about some really conceptual insight. This surely happens to me in Sashin. I really see it's something new, and my mind starts working it, and it's getting kind of, I'm losing presence, right? I've lost the breath. Or these extraordinary things like seeing things outside the room, right? Liz talked about hallucinations in her early sessions, seeing the images of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in her visions. This is when the mind and the breath are out of harmony. So, when this happens, sit placing the mind in the lap, in your lap. So, which is similar to bring your attention down. This is Kazon. Sit placing your mind in your lap. When the mind sinks into dullness, if you're feeling kind of dull and sloth and torpor are taking over, raise attention on your hairline between your eyes. So this is like, and this is, I've seen this in various other meditation manuals from ancient times to the present, is this, again, using mental attention to subtly affect your kind of energy, if your mind is sinking, you raise the attention, your hairline, it's not clear whether the translation is your hairline between your eyes, not like over here, but just here, or are your hairline or between your eyes. It's translated different ways. But you're, you know, either here or here, you kind of like focus your attention, which, you know, usually we're talking about down here, right? So this is, if you're dull, you raise it upwards. This is, if you have trouble remembering, what do I do again, Wendell? It's this thing, when you're sinking, you raise your attention up, and when you're floating too high, you bring your attention down. So it's very intuitive and natural, I think. I've also heard the instruction, he doesn't mention, but your gaze, which is usually like angled down like this during zazen, if you're dull, you just raise your gaze up and look like straight out. And similar, and if you're kind of scattered, sometimes I even notice if I'm scattered, my gaze is looking actually up and kind of bring it back down. So both the eyes and the attention can tune the body, breath, and mind in this way. So when the mind scatters into distraction, place attention at the tip of the nose or in the tanden, the dantian. Tip of the nose is maybe because it's just a focal point if your mind is scattered, distracted. But I think the downward area is very helpful. After this, just rest attention in your left palm. And this is actually comes from, this might be the one that you heard also, Ru Jing said this to Dogen, when sitting zazen, rest your mind in your left palm. And I think that's just because you say, place the left hand on the right hand, thumb tips touching. If you have your hands like this, then you'd rest it in your right palm. For you. Which is the same thing I hear as in your lap. But the literal instruction, rest your mind in the palm of your mudra, if your mudra is like this. And it's interesting to me that they say it's 1.5 inches below the navel is this dantian, and that the later Kazon says your thumbs are at the altitude of your navel. And so it just so happens that these fingers are exactly 1.5 inches below the navel. So they touch that dantian point. And I think it's a really nice focal point for sitting zazen. And having that light touch there is another thing. This is not in these instructions, but I notice that if mind is dull, this hand mudra often sinks, and it separates from the body for for me. It's down like this. And so part of like, and everything sort of collapsed like this, but then noticing it, we bring the, you know, the lower back forward and the hands back to that touching point. It's like, it's like plugging in, a power cord and creating this like circuit or something here, or that touch. And maybe if we're too agitated, then maybe our mudra is getting tight, scrunching it too much. Maybe that's less often. Yeah. Oh. Take care. So, sit for a long time and don't struggle to calm the mind, and it will naturally be free of distraction. He says, sit for a long time. We'll go on a little bit longer. I just thought to skip ahead temporarily, because this is almost at the very end, just in case we don't get to it. There's a whole other, more detailed section on these two issues of dullness and distraction, of sloth and torpor and restlessness and worry. So I think it's related to this section. I'll just bring it up now. Kazen says, if dullness or sleepiness overcome your sitting, move or sway the body and open the eyes wider, or place attention on the hairline or between your eyebrows. If you're, so maybe like a little bit of movement in Zazen may be okay for feeling dull. And I think the sitting up straight part is helpful too. If you're still not fresh, rub the eyes or body. These are things we might think of as, if we're sitting alone. Some of these things in group practice we don't necessarily do, but I think maybe okay to quietly, if you want, you know, like, it might help. But if sitting alone or on a break, you know, I think just with Qigong too, we sometimes, you know, invigorate the body by, rubbing or slapping. If that still doesn't wake you, stand and walk in kinhin, always walking clockwise. Once you've gone about 100 steps, you probably won't be sleepy any longer. The way to walk is to take a half step with each breath. Walk as if without walking, silent and unmoving. So, is part of, I think, the function of kinhin. If we're feeling sleepy, it is a nice movement. If you still don't feel fresh after walking meditation, wash your eyes and forehead with cold water. Can't really do it in the Zendo, but definitely when waking up in the morning, I, without fail, always, brush the teeth and wash the face usually with cold water like that, and it's a nice wake up. Or recite the introduction to the Bodhisattva precepts, which I'm not sure what the introduction exactly is, but there is one text that's that I've found that's sometimes recited when they recite all the Bodhisattva precepts of the Brahmajala Sutra on full moons, not so much in Japan, but some, I think this might be Chinese, and this sort of preamble is this kind of like sort of encouragement to, like, life is short, don't waste time sentiments. So it might be referring to that. Do something. Don't just fall asleep. Or actually, it says use some skillful means. Don't just fall asleep. You should be aware of the great matter of birth and death and the swiftness of impermanence. What are you doing sleeping when your eye of the way is not clear If dullness and sinking arise repeatedly, you should vow, quote, "My karmic habits are deeply rooted, and so I'm wrapped in dullness. When will dullness disperse? May the compassion of the Buddhas and ancestors lift this darkness and heaviness," unquote. You can speak like that to yourself. So those are all like subtle and drastic measures to wake up. If the mind is distracted and wanders, this is the other side, when we're there's restlessness and worry and distraction. Place attention at the tip of the nose or the tanden and count inhalations and exhalations. Interestingly, that's the same thing he said before too, is for dullness, you can place it at the tip of your nose or the tanden. So maybe it's just about focusing the mind more locatedly if you're distracted. But he doesn't say raise it up to your hairline. It's generally, I think, when scattered, it's more bring your attention down. If that doesn't stop scattering, including counting inhale and exhale, even though Dogen says this is could be a small vehicle practice, he says our practice is not the small or the great, Dogen says. And here Kazan says, especially when distracted, count. And of course that makes sense, right? Because it's really, you have to stay focused on the number when counting. If you're just following the breath without counting, your mind can wander a little bit at the same time, seemingly. But if you count, it gives very direct feedback of if you're on it or not. If that still doesn't stop the scattering, bring up a koan and keep it in awareness. For example, what is it that thus comes? Or Yunnan's, when he was asked, when no thought arises, where's the problem then? And he said, Mount Sumeru. So just bring up, Mount Sumeru. I feel so scattered. Mount Sumeru. Or Zhaozhou's, when asked, what's the meaning of Bodhidharma is coming from the West? He said, the cypress tree in the garden. So this brings up the whole koans, but Kazan just says, bring up a koan like, what is it that thus comes? Or Mount Sumeru, or cypress tree in the garden. I think not the whole longer stories, but just these phrases. I keep thinking about what I'm going to do after Sashin. Cypress tree in the garden. Sayings like this that you can't draw any flavor out of are suitable. So not like these long, full-page koans with all this back-and-forth dialogue. Not like that. The flavorless koans. Cypress tree in the garden. If scattering or distraction still continues, sit and look to that point where the breath ends and the eyes close forever, where the embryo is not yet conceived, where not a single thought can be produced. So it's not clear whether he's talking about literally, like actually our own death. Maybe a combination of remembering impermanence and our own impending death, maybe will calm our distraction, or in this kind of mystical way, right? Look to that point where the breath ends and the eyes close, where the embryo is not yet conceived, where not a single thought is produced. After we've died, but before we're born. When a sense of the emptiness of the person and the emptiness of things appears, the scattered, distracted mind will surely rest. So that's an interesting one, I think. Just like really, I could also hear it as just, we're distracted, like, really focus on just, like, nothing. Like, just stop. And nothing is arising here. Just kind of, like, just cut the root of discriminating thought, like, in this moment. And so sometimes maybe we can do that, especially if we're, you know, really... That's almost like his last resort, too. The mind's really, like, all over the place. It's been going for a while. We maybe just silently say to ourselves, just stop. And maybe distraction stops. He says, generally, anything that wears out or exhausts the body and mind causes illness. This, I think, so true. If we're rushing around doing a lot, anything that wears out body and mind causes illness and also makes it hard to sit. So, Sishin, we can really relax. Don't sit where there's fires, floods, or windstorms, or where there's bandits, or by the ocean. I sometimes do sit zazen on the beach, and I feel like it's not the ideal place to sit, partly because it's so windy. Usually it's windy. And if it's not windy, then it's going to be full of those little sand flies and dried seaweed smell. Don't sit near bars or brothels or near where courtesans, male or female, sing and play music. Don't live near kings, ministers, powerful or rich families, people with many desires, those who crave name and fame, or those who like to argue meaninglessly. Just don't sit zazen in these places. Although large Buddhist ceremonies and the construction of Buddhist temples might be good things, one who's committed to zazen practice shouldn't get involved. I think some of us around here know that when sometimes we do arrange large ceremonies, which are kind of distracting, but no, they're good things, he says. And we do construction projects, which are also distracting and annoying. And you have to, like, negotiate property lines with neighbors, and this is like, we might say also, you know, of course we have to take care of our life, but Sashin, especially, right, when we're focusing on zazen, we try to put all this stuff aside. I think many people are not able to come to Sashin because of all these projects, often great projects supporting Zen centers even. So how do we, it's hard, right? Because we really want to support the practice place, but we also want to keep it simple, like it's a dance. How, you know, where's that middle way? On one side, Dogen likes to quote the story of Zhao Zhou, who one time his sitting platform, the leg broke, and so they temporarily, for the rest of Sashin, just kind of like propped it up with a piece of firewood and kind of like tied the firewood there, and then maybe something like after Sashin, the work crew was like, we'll build you a new leg now that matches the other one. And Zhao Zhou was like, no, don't bother with that. Don't spend your time building legs for sitting platforms. Just spend your time sitting. Dogen likes that story, but of course he oversaw huge construction projects himself, and building a Heiji and so on. So the spirit of simplify. We lost one of our, the spirit offering. There's these little rakes to collect the spirit offering. One of them broke, and I started thinking about during Sesshin, how can we build another one of those so we don't have to just use like a spoon or a fork. I like spent some of my Sesshin time thinking about that. We could build it out of a setsu stick. But now today I feel like let's just use the fork. What's it? Probably does, but I don't know.
Isn't there a Buddhist supply store where you can request items like that?
Yeah, we could have it like overnight delivered from Japan. Yeah. Maybe they have those in Japan. I think they might build them even over there, though. This is really like a Zendo tool. So in Sesshin, we try to keep it simple. Don't be fond of teaching Dharma, as this leads to distraction and scattering. I'll vouch for that. In Sesshin, thinking about the upcoming talks. Don't be delighted by huge assemblies or seek after disciples. Don't try to study and practice many different things. So many things. He's talking about how practitioners get distracted, right? Don't sit where it's too bright or dark, too cold or too hot. Don't sit where there's gamblers and pleasure seekers. Go stay in a monastery or a forest, quiet forest. Quiet grove. Stay in a temple where there's a good teacher, a Kalyana Mitra, good friends. Go deep into the mountains and valleys. Practice Kinhin by clear waters and green mountains. Clear the mind by a stream or under a tree. Observe impermanence without fail, and you will keep the mind of the way, bodhicitta. Your sitting mat should be well padded so you can sit comfortably. The practice place, the dojo, should always be kept clean. Always burn incense and offer flowers to the Dharma protectors, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and your practice will be protected. So we, at work period in Soji, we clean the dojo, and we have thick mats to sit on, and we offer incense to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas like Manjushri, and to Dharma protectors like Ida Sonten, so the practice will be protected.
And flowers and light
we offer. Put a statue of a Buddha, Bodhisattva, or Arhat on the altar, and the demons of distraction will not overwhelm you. Rest always in great compassion, great love and great compassion, dai ji dai hi, and dedicate the limitless merit of Zazen to all living beings. Do not become arrogant, conceited, or proud of your understanding of Dharma. That's the way of those outside the way and usual people. Maintain the vow to end the kleshas, the afflictions, delusions are inexhaustible. Vow to end them. Vow to realize and confirm awakening and just sit. Shikantaza. Do nothing at all. This is the essential art of practicing Zen. Just sit and do nothing at all. Wash your eyes and feet. Keep your body and mind at ease and your deportment in harmony. Shed worldly sentiments and don't become attached to sublime feelings about the way. Though you should not begrudge the teachings. Don't speak of it unless you're asked. If someone asks, keep silent 3 times. If they still ask from their heart, then give the teachings. Mm-hmm. That's strict, huh? Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about this? Mm-hmm. Wait till people, I really want to hear, right? So I can see it's getting time to stop and talk now because I'm not sure if this is being asked for. If you still wish to speak, out of 10 times, keep quiet 9. It's as if moss grew over your mouth from disuse. Where your mouth is like a fan in winter. It's just sitting there unused. Who needs a fan in winter? Like a wind bell hanging in the air, indifferent to the direction of the wind. This is how people of the way are. Don't use the Dharma for your own profit. Don't use the way to try to make yourself important. This is the most important point to remember. I think it's a lot of what he's, is out of his guidelines and admonitions are for Dharma teachers here, right? People he's practicing with. So we do talk a lot sometimes during this time in Sesshin, these hours, but most of the day we might have a lot of ideas about what would be good for everybody, including ourselves. But we just sit silently together, support each other's practice in silence. And most of the day, out of 10 times we wish to speak, we can actually keep quiet for 10. We dedicate the merit of our zazen and our gathering to open to the Dharma, to all beings everywhere with the mind of great love and great compassion. May this benefit touch everyone and extend to all those, especially those who are sick and couldn't be here now. We hold them in our zazen as well. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.